together, many words have passed between. And the feelings that we shared are all behind.
Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, June 26, 2023. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. If you are listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. You can also support us by purchasing the books Government by Consent and Court Access and the Common Law, also found on the right-hand side of the website. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab, top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week in our Bible reading. We're in Hebrews, chapter 3, read by Alexander Scorby. Hebrews chapter 3.
Chapter 3. Wherefore, holy brethren, partakers of the heavenly calling, of our profession, Christ Jesus, who was faithful to him that appointed him, as also Moses was faithful in all his house. For this man was counted worthy of more glory than Moses, inasmuch as he who hath builded the house hath more honor than the house. For every house is builded by some man, but he that built all things is God. And Moses verily was faithful in all his house, as a servant, for a testimony of those things which were to be spoken after. But Christ as a son over his own house. Whose house are we, if we hold fast the confidence and the rejoicing of the hope firm unto the end? Wherefore, as the Holy Ghost saith, Today if ye will hear his voice, harden not your hearts, as in the provocation, in the day of temptation in the wilderness, when your fathers tempted me, proved me, and saw my works 40 years. Wherefore I was grieved with that generation, and said, They do alway err in their heart, and they have not known my ways. So I swear in my wrath, they shall not enter into my rest. Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. But exhort one another daily, while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. For we are made partakers of Christ, if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast unto the end, while it is said, Today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts as in the provocation. For some, when they had heard, did provoke, howbeit not all that came out of Egypt by Moses. But with whom was he grieved 40 years? Was it not with them that had sinned, whose carcasses fell in the wilderness? And to whom sware he that they should not enter into his rest, but to them that believed not? So we see that they could not enter in because of unbelief.
I guess I was muted. Do we have any questions or any announcements, Dan?
Yes, just a minute, John. I'll dig them up. The first question tonight relates to a court case where a fellow that was apparently involved in a barbershop robbery was found guilty, and the judge later lifted the conviction, and this person wants to know if there's any way we can prevent this judge from committing an unconstitutional act of overturning a jury decision.
Well, it's very interesting. So someone was found guilty of a crime, and I guess it was a robbery, I think you said, and they were found guilty by a jury, and then the judge overturned it?
Apparently, the judge lifted it.
Well, the Supreme, you know, they have to go up to the federal courts and push the issue. It's a constitutional, problem. And they do whatever they want, it seems. They're really bold these days. So that's the only thing that could be done is take it up to the higher court. Actually, I'd go right to the federal court because this is a constitutional issue.
Okay. Next question is, I am praying that we can trust Donald J. Trump, but some of the things he has done do not line up with his rhetoric of America first, such as handing over the White House Oval Office to the enemy, both foreign and domestic, or that of instituting the COVID restrictions, to name just two. Does the leadership here at NLA accept the statements from Donald J. Trump as being authentically made from his heart, or is there some question about the veracity, questioning his motives?
Well, I feel very confident concerning Trump, and he didn't have any other way to go but to leave office. Yeah, many of us that saw what was going on and understood being awoken would like to see something had done immediately, but the people wouldn't understand. That's the problem, you know, and I'm sure he, you know, worked this out with the military. I don't think he made this decision totally on his own, of course. Well, he's the final word, of course, but I'm sure he listened to his military, and he's a smart guy. And we just got to get enough people to realize before the military could move. It's going to be really, really a frightening thing for many people when the military makes that move. And I would presume that we really have to get a lot of information out real quickly. Of course, they would have to get a lot of information out real quickly concerning the crimes and what's really going on. You know, we know that we've been seized, that the United States government has been seized control by a corrupt mafia at its highest ranks. And these people stop at nothing. You get in the way, they take you out. They crush you. They do what they want in the courts. You know, we see what's going on. But most people don't see that. They don't know it. But I understand. I heard that there is over 60% of the people now kind of have awoken. And we need more to awake, I guess. I don't know what that number would be. I don't know what that line would be that needs to be crossed. But at some point, I do believe the military is going to move. I do think that Trump's going to take control. I do think he's going to be reelected in 24. And I do think we're going to reestablish or resurrect the republic. So, all right, anything else?
Yes, the last question is, I'm working on my facts of the case paper. In John's example of an IRS case, in the footnote where the page numbers go, he shows for us to put your name, -V, first name, et al., and so forth, if there are several individuals who are getting sued, or do we just put one of the names there?
Well, you have to name everybody that's being sued. So you can't name, everyone has to go in the heading of your paperwork all the time. Now, of course, down on the bottom right-hand side, when you put quite often down in the bottom, the name of the case, the plaintiff, which would be the first plaintiff if there's more than one, and the defendants, the first defendant, if there's more than one, so it would be X, V, Y. So I think that was the only part of that question, right? Want to know that?
Right.
Okay.
That's the only questions I have tonight, John. There is probably an announcement we should make.
Okay.
This has been ongoing in regards to the Brunson brothers. Now, they are asking for a letter-writing campaign, and they have set it up essentially automated. You go make a $2 donation or whatever you want, and you can go to Loy's case, which you'll find under https://Loy, that's L-O-Y, Brunson, Brunson.com, and the directions are all there to just put your name in and a note if you want to add it to the letter and so on, and these will be sent to the Supreme Court. And I think he said he has 7,500 letters so far. And also, for Raylan Brunson's case, he's suing the three most liberal Supreme Court judges. His website does the same thing, and it's http://enoughisenough.me, and you can go there and make your little $2 donation, and they'll go ahead and handle everything. You can put what you want in the letter for a comment. They will print it out, and they will put it in an envelope, and they will mail it off to, that's the federal court and district court in Utah for that case. But both these people are really doing a great job, and I think it behooves us to try and support them by sending letters. 7,500 letters is a lot of letters, but I'm sure they can get a lot more than that.
So. Okay, what you might want to do is create a very short letter, you know, get to the point, you know, so it's not no longer than a paragraph, maybe a couple of sentences, and why don't you send it out to the entire, you know, membership.
Well, they have that short letter already done, John, and it would be automatically mailed. All you have to do is make your donation. And if you want to add a comment to it, and why, that's fine.
Yeah, what I'm saying is they have to go somewhere to a website, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so put a letter on what, instructing people what they need to do in order to support that case, and send it out to our entire membership.
Okay, then we'd have to look
up
all the
mailing
addresses. Yeah.
I'm sorry, say that again?
See, the advantage of doing it this way is the address to the Supreme Court and so on and the federal court is all there automatic. Nobody has to look up anything, you know?
Yeah, but you have to send the people somewhere. You got a link, right?
Yeah, and it's in the newsletter. All I got to do is click.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I'm thinking maybe you might want to send one out on its own because some people may not be reading the newsletter. Or put it on the top, the first thing, so that people would see that first.
Yeah, it's right under announcements on the front page.
All right. Okay, that's fine. All right. I guess we can go to a Q&A. I don't know if anybody's in the queue yet. One person is in the queue, but anybody else wants to get into the queue. But before we get started here, I added some videos here on Christianity and America, and you know, I think it's really enlightening and very helpful to understanding common law if you go through all of these videos. I found this video by this guy John Lennox, and it's two parts, and it's really, really powerful, enlightening, eye-opening. This man really understands scripture, and he also understands what's going on in the world, and he brings it together in a very, very interesting and enlightening way. This guy here also, this is six parts, and ultimately what he's covering and the point he's making, at the bottom line on this, it's Marxism versus Christianity. That's what's going on in America. And he makes this point on how far back this goes. You know, we know it goes all the way back to the beginning, ultimately, all the way back to, you know, the debate for the Constitution. And so there's six videos on this. Really, really good, eye-opening. And again, this guy also has a deep understanding of scriptures. And he really lays it out well, and he also has a deep understanding of what's going on around us. So he puts a lot of things together. I'm sure you'll learn a lot of new things by going through these videos, and it'll give you a great perspective. So anyway, I guess we'll go to the Q&A. Anybody wants to get into the queue, now's the time to do it. We've got the first person. Brett, you got the mic. The redhead. Oh, not yet. You don't have the mic. Now you got the mic. Go right ahead, Brett.
Hello?
Yep, go right ahead. You got the mic, Brett.
You can hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, I'm following up as on the case that I had last Tuesday. I guess at the last minute, a different judge came in, and I was wondering, are they able to do that, or is that some of the games that they play?
Okay.
Hello?
All right, I'm sorry, I was muted. You've been resisting this judge, right?
No, this was a new judge. I didn't.
No,
the original.
I'm talking about the other judge. The other judge, you've been resisting him, right?
No, this would have been my first meeting with that judge, but I'd never got a chance to because they had a substitute. So
you did also file some papers, I think.
I filed the jurisdiction challenge and then a default, but the prosecutor made it a point to say that I was not an attorney and I shouldn't be listened to. They showed the judge, the substitute judge, the papers that I sent, and the prosecutor stated that they didn't understand.
We did a memorandum. I don't know if you remember the right to practice law. You're going to want to take that memorandum and file it into the court.
Okay.
Lays out the rights. It's an unalienable right to have access to the courts of justice. It's an unalienable right to practice law. You don't have to be some kind of a bar attorney or anything. I mean, look, you should be educated and understand how things work. And you know, if people hire you, that's fine. But we're not. I know for me, I'm not really looking to be a lawyer in that way. I'm just looking to fight things that I personally see that needs to be fought. And to assist some people from time to time, but you know, you have an unalienable right to do this.
Well, the proceeding was like less than 5 minutes. They moved pretty fast, and they found my minor child in default for non-appearance.
And what does that mean?
That my child would have to pay restitution, and I just looked at the letter today, and they're threatened with confinement if the restitution isn't paid.
They're going to confine your child or you?
My child to the county jail because it was sent to my child.
And how old is your child again?
14.
That's amazing, huh? And this is a village court, isn't it?
Yes.
This is amazing. I'll tell you what, you should bring this into the federal court. How much are they claiming that she would need to pay?
It's $441.50.
Well, I'll suggest this. I mean, you could do what you want, but I'll suggest that you pay it you know, and that you take this into the federal court for cause for denying of due process. And, I mean, there's all kinds of things. They're putting a threat on you to put your child in jail. This court doesn't have the ability to, you know, put anyone in jail ultimately. People just don't know that. People just go right along with it. I mean, even if you deny it and fight it, you know, there's nothing more dangerous than ignorance and inaction. But they don't have that authority. For safety purposes, you might want to consider just giving them the money under protest. You know, I would do it under protest. And you know, I know that it's not that you're disagreeing with it, but it's the way they're going about this. This whole thing is ridiculous, the way they're going about it. So, yeah, I would sue that judge. I would sue. That's why they changed judges. I would sue the both judges. I would sue the prosecutor, and I'd go after them for some damages, stress, threatening you, denial of due process, a whole bunch of things. I'd take it to the federal court, make sure you write a good wherefore clause on all that. But that's what I suggest. The other thing is just to pay it and walk away too. So whatever you want to do. I think there was an agreement that, you know, you would settle this deal, but you never had the opportunity to settle it. They just kind of dragging you into court. They don't have this power or authority, and especially against a minor. My goodness, a threat like that.
Would this be considered a personal injury, you think, or I guess, well, how do you put a price on the amount of stress that they cause you?
Well, first of all, I'd start with looking for every violation of your rights, a due process to begin with, the denial of due process. I'd start with that. And the bottom line on the denial of due process, in my opinion, is $1,000. Look, at any time I get a right violated, I look at it as being worth $1,000 in Morgan Silver dollars face value. Okay, so that's about $26,000 last time I looked. I'm sure it's higher now.
Per violation?
Per violation, per individual. Okay, and then I'd be looking for the stress upon your child and yourself, and that might even be more. I don't know. It depends on how much stress you feel it put upon you. It could be anywhere from $1,000 to $5,000. Again, I'm kind of just suggesting that kind of thing. We don't want to go crazy with millions of dollars, but that's quite a bit of money. You know, for every $1,000 in face value is $26,000, so it's a lot of money. And when you figure out all the numbers, you know, all the people involved. So those are the two things I would really press upon. I mean, how dare this court threaten you like that? Also, you denied jurisdiction. They ignored that. They didn't make any decision on jurisdiction. And they did this without a jury. But they don't. Again, they don't have the jurisdiction to even pull in a lawful jury anyway.
And I brought up that for the pretrial conference that I called and left messages, and the prosecutor said they were under no obligation to communicate with me. And then the judge said, well, this paperwork is irrelevant. And then they moved for default.
Well, again, you know, all this has to be put into your affidavit for your federal case. And remember, you don't have to pay to go to the federal court. Because you have a number, an index number, or whatever they want to call it, and that number in that court, we have some instructions and examples on how to move to federal court for cause, and just follow that framework, make it your own, and make it your own wherefore clause. You got to have a good affidavit, and the paper should be very, very minimum. Ultimately addressing the problem. Your affidavit is attached. It should be referred to. The affidavit should be referred to that's attached. And that lays out all of the stress and different things and violations. But you want to get each one of those violations in your paper. But again, keep it short and sweet. You don't need to go into a federal court with a whole bunch of pages and a lot of information. Really the court's only going to hear the violation, the right violation of your rights, and think a little bit about this. Go look at the Bill of Rights and think. And as you read through it, think about if anything applies to you. This threat is really a serious problem. But I'd sue.
Is there an example in the? As far as how to list in the affidavit and keeping it short, is there like an example?
Well, the affidavit should be factual, nothing but the facts. That's it. No lore, nothing. Just what happened. And again, it should be focused on the stress and what they did, not on the purpose that you were in court for. You don't get into the telephone thing. You don't get into any of those things. You're going to get what you're talking about to the federal court, because the only thing the federal court can hear is your violation of rights. So your denial of due process is one of the main things. The way that they don't you challenged jurisdiction and they ignored it. And then they told you that you can't practice law. And you have a right to practice law. I would add that memorandum to the case in the federal level, for as far as your right to come in and represent yourself and take care of your own business. And just think about it as you go through the first I'd write my affidavit. But again, remember, the violations that the court put upon you and your daughter. That's what you want to write the case about. You don't want to get into the rest of the story. They don't want to hear that.
Okay,
if you get into the rest of the story, they may throw the case out.
Okay, so with the by putting in the due process, do I have to list everything that's in the due process? Or?
Well, no, just the words due process and refer to the Bill of Rights. But go through the Bill of Rights and read through it thinking about your case after you write your affidavit, because then that's what's rolling around in your mind and you may see some other violations. You know, denial of due process is the main thing, you know, and the court threatening to incarcerate your daughter. I mean, that's just amazing. A village court threatening a child. You know, those are the two major things that I see. Now, remember another thing. You don't have to run on this real quickly. You can take your time with this. What's really a problem for you is they're threatening to come in and arrest your daughter. I mean, total insanity. Have you spoken with the sheriff?
Not yet.
You go down and talk to the sheriff and see what he could do and tell him what this village judge done. And see where he goes. If he understands the Constitution, maybe it's something he could do. If he did understand the law, there's absolutely a lot he can do. Okay, he could arrest that judge, in my opinion, anyway. You know, but again, you know, you want to make sure you prevent your daughter from being incarcerated. You know, that threat is alive, so I would take care of that. Under protest, I'd make it clear this is under protest, and you might want to. Did you ever have a chance to tell the story that you're willing to work this out with this individual? This is ridiculous. We shouldn't even be here.
Yes, I did, and the judge said, "Well, unfortunately, that would be the right thing to do, but that's not how things are done now." Something to that effect.
Well, that's dumb too. Well, again, you know, think about all these things. But remember, once they go away by paying this, you know, whatever it is they say you owe, which you would have paid anyway. But take your time. You know, you don't have to do it right away. You can go months down the road. So if you need more education and want to go through some more things before you do it, that might be the wise way to go. I wouldn't jump too quickly into the federal court. And you could move it in any time.
Okay. So now by doing it under protest, am I stating those words verbally or am I putting that?
Oh, no, I'd put it in writing. I'd put it in writing and file it into the court. I'd literally do it in a formal way. You know, I would write a paper, put the heading on it, write a paper, very short, a paragraph or two, but I would take a paragraph and you know, you end it with your signature and stuff, but you put your heading on it and your court's name and all that stuff. And then just put it, you know, like to the court, addressing the court that this court has violated my right of due process. They've threatened my child. I would lay out that kind of thing, you know, just list out anything else you could think of. And, you know, and for that reason, I'm paying this under protest. And you know, give it some thought. But generally speaking, that's what I would kind of put in there.
I see.
And jurisdiction. They didn't have jurisdiction over you. That's another thing. You know? Well, again, that's denial of due process. So, but you do want to put that in to your papers on your federal court, you know, explaining that. You made a jurisdiction challenge, and once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided. It's not be nice to be decided. It must be decided. And then you were denied to even speak much because the prosecutor shut you down saying, you're not a lawyer. Can't talk in here. I mean, it's something so stupid. It's pathetic. You know, if you're not a lawyer, you can't talk, then why do they ask people to come in and make a plea? You can't talk. Why do they make you make a plea then? You know?
So with that paper, The payment should accompany that?
Yeah, well, yeah, I would add the check in there, and who did they say to make it out to?
They didn't specify who to make it out. They just said who to make it out to. It just, it has to be paid. So their paperwork is very vague. They don't say much, and it's a lot of confusion.
Well, you can call up and ask them, you know, and let me think about this. Did they say pay restitution? What words did they use?
Fine.
They called it a fine?
$400? Yeah, they use forfeiture and costs, and then it's a list of items with
how much altogether?
$441.
Make it out to the court. And put your paper in at the same time, and then hit him with moving to federal court for cause when you're ready. You know, it's not like you're doing an appeal. You're suing the court. So you don't have to give any notice of appeal or anything. You'll get the notice of the removal, and then they'll have to send lawyers to the federal district court to respond to all this.
I see. Okay.
I mean, I'm trying to think of a way to sue the parents of the other child, because again, you know, they should have just come to you and talked to you, and you should have worked it out.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. They still haven't provided that information. But what they did, they this is what was weird. When they sent the citation to the house, it had very little information. Then when I went to the proceeding, they gave me a copy of that citation, but it's different. It had the whatever complaint, who said what, on the bottom of it, and it had the child's name. Now, that's what's weird, is that they cleared everybody out of the room because it was dealing with minor children, but yet I still would still have to expose my minor child to everyone in that building, and they gave me information, name and address of the child, but I don't have any information who the parent is. So I don't think it would be right for me to address this other minor child.
No, it wouldn't, yeah. Yeah, well, again, you know, I agree with you on that. Did that child come into court?
No. The prosecutor said that they had a witness there ready to testify, but they didn't. But
the law requires the accuser.
I'm sorry?
The law requires your right to face your accuser. But again, don't make no big thing about that, because then they're just they're just using those people too. Shame on those parents that didn't just make the phone call and say, hey, did you know what took place and what happened? You guys could have worked it all out. How much was the phone worth out of the $400 and change? How much did the phone worth?
This is $349.
All right, again.
For an uninsured phone, that's what the prosecutor said.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, what I said to you is what I would do if I were you. So.
I see. Okay.
So anyway, but take your time, because you're still going through the course, and you can file your papers at a later time. And we'll be covering a lot of other stuff that will probably be helpful to you in this case, because we're going to cover, you know, moving to federal court at some point in the next few chapters coming up.
So at least paying them this will get them to back down or back That's off?
It's all over. It's done then. At least you're not, your daughter's not in jeopardy of being abused by this these crazy people. All right, anything else?
Other than that, I have them there coming after my child who's younger than that. So it's like a big target on, I mean, these are middle school children. It's still the same thing, I think. It's dealing with minor children, and I see the same thing happening. They want over $500 for that child.
I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't either. I just received more citations in the mail. It seemed like once this had ended, now I'm getting, they're just falling out of the sky.
And you don't know what those sites. I mean, look at that. That case is over. Is it another issue now?
Yeah, it's another issue. My son, who is 13, didn't do anything. Was at a park and had police contact, and so now with no proof or anything, they're saying disorderly conduct and destruction of public property when he was just there with a girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it's weird, strange. So this is the police doing this on this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, the only thing I could say, let's see how it goes, and you may have the same problem.
Let's see.
So, all right, we'll take the next person. Keep us informed as you go along.
Thank you, Joe.
Okay. Okay, we'll take our next caller. It looks like Gina. You got the mic, Gina. What state are you from?
Hello, can you hear me okay?
Yep, her. What's your state?
I'm in Maryland.
Maryland, okay.
Yeah. So I just received both of my books I purchased, and I'm just now starting the course. So I'm new. I corrected my status, but I'm not really. My question is not about that. I have been charged with driving motor vehicle on highway without required license and authorization. There was two more. A second was failure of individual driving on highway to display license to uniform police on demand. And then the third was failure to display and reflected. There was a light. That's a payable fine. I was pulled over and I explained to them that I was traveling. You know, I gave them the whole deal. And they were very aggressive, and they wanted me to get out of the truck, and just, I did, and I shouldn't have, but I did. So they wanted to do sobriety tests on me and all kinds of, you know, craziness. So I passed those, and I went to court. They continued it, and now I go back August 1st, and I won't be through reading these books by then, of course. Or the course, but I would like to know what motions should I file now before the court hearing on August 1st.
Well, you know, you need to go through the course to really understand a lot. And first order of business is sending the paper and, you know, denying the jurisdiction, challenging the jurisdiction. That's the first. And, you know, you want to drag things out as long as you can so you can get educated. Now, if it's not until August, okay, let's see, we're coming at the end of June here, we got July, even whole months. you know, if you really buckle down and put a lot of hours in and go to school like every day, you know, 4 or 5 hours or whatever, but do it every day, you can catch up with that pretty quick and definitely get through the course before, you know, before your court case.
Okay.
And at least then you'll have an overview of how due process works. And then you go back to the beginning and start all over again. You know, when we have every Saturday when we have a course, the homework is to go over everything we've done. So, and the more you go over, the more you know. One of the ways I like to learn, and let me mute you for right now because there's a lot of noise coming through your mic there. But, you know, one of the things, you know, you want to do, well, let me think about this a minute. Well, you definitely got to challenge jurisdiction in this particular case. That's the first order of business. But again, getting back to learning how things work, and next, let me see. Yeah, next lesson we're going to do an overview of what we've learned, and try to make it, you know, lay out the simplicity of really going to court. It's really all about working through your facts, and then putting that information on paper, and then backing up whatever law you need to back it up, and using memorandums to do that. So that's the important thing. But one of the ways I like to learn, I do this with numerous things. Right now, I'm doing it with the Anti-Federalist Papers. I have it on MP3, and I listen to them. You know, if I'm driving or whatever I'm doing, especially if I'm doing mindless things, I'm listening. And for that reason, if you go out to our page, well, let me go to the page and show you on the educational page, Court Access Common Law, come down to the table of contents. No, go to the recorded videos of the course. Okay, you know, you want to go through all these videos, of course, but for reviewing, again, you could do that with MP3s. Every one of these sessions is an MP3. Okay, so we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 8, 12, 16. We got 18 MP3s, and I'm not sure how many more we're going to have, but I would imagine we'll be done sometime by the end of July. We'll be done with the course. But again, you can go through this over and over again. The more times you go through it, the more it'll sink into your brain. And those who have been following along all this time, our next session, like I said, we're going to be doing an overview. Let me go up and take a quick look here. The table of contents. Okay. We're going to recap and get some additional notes, but we're going to recap what we've done. To really get a nice view of the simplicity of this whole process. Because even though it sounds complex and we go through a lot of, you know, we've spent a lot of time, each one of our sessions is a couple hours long, and we spend a lot of time on things, but really it's all simple. You know, understanding the common law is the biggest thing. But I'd like to make a point here. You said something about your status. You don't need to do anything for your status. You're one of the people. That's it. You got status. Going in and, you know, getting rid of your license and doing things like that, hopefully you're not going to do any of that. You know, well, a lot of things, you know, that people are teaching on the Internet, it's only going to get you in trouble. The best way to deal with this is really to just challenge it and exercise the law. That's the key to this whole thing. And so that's where you want to go with it. But you want to be careful. I also see a lot of videos on YouTube where people are challenging the cop. You know, they're causing more problems than they really have to deal with. You know, they'll roll their window down maybe an inch and lock their doors, and they'll be argumentative with the cop. That guy doesn't have a clue on what's going on. It doesn't even make any sense. I'll go fight with the judge. I'm not going to fight with no cop. I have never, ever, ever been asked to step out of my vehicle. And, you know, they pull you over, and I give them what they ask for. I'm, you know, polite, nice, and that's it. You know, I'm on my way. But again, you want to be careful when you get pulled over by a cop. You know, if they ask me if they search my car, I'd tell them no on that. That's for sure. You know, again, people, I think, cause more problems. They cause their own problems by being, you know, taking an offense to the cop and arguing with them and just going through a lot of things. The cop has no clue. They don't know the law. Anything else?
Okay, sorry, I had to unmute. All right, well, no, there's nothing else. I'm going to catch up on those MP3s. So you could file the charge.
Watch the video, Joe. This is coming in on the course from the beginning now. Go up and start at the top on the first video, okay? And okay. Go here's the first video, you know, start it right there. And then you go to the next one and the next one and the next one and so on. And you can jump in live, but if you jump in live and you know, when you catch up, you want to continue with what you've gone through live already, because really you're missing a lot. So when you're coming in at this point, you're missing a lot of foundation. So you'll want to go through it twice. But it's the audios that you want to play when you're, you know, doing something and, you know, mindless, and you can listen to something if you're driving or whatever. You know, you could be listening to these audios. So that'll be really helpful and help to sink it in. But it is important to get the visual, really important to get the visual. So you do want to go through the visual.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much.
All right. Okay, by the way, if anybody else wants to get into the queue, we only have one other person in the queue. So let's take our next caller. Next question, Mary Ann, you got the mic. I think you do anyway. I click the button. Let me try it again. Okay, Mary Ann, you got the mic.
Oh, hi there, John. It's Mary Ann. And I was listening to what Brent was saying earlier about the issue in the court representing his going in and speaking on behalf of his minor child. That is a huge issue right now in the United States in general, is they weren't challenging his right to be in court to represent, to speak for himself. They were challenging the father's right to speak on behalf of a minor child. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think it's both, actually, but I think you're right, too. Look, at lawyers think that they own the courts. These are all courts. This is the courts of justice. These courts have no power, real no authority, although they exercise it because the people believe. You know, reality is one perceives it. Too many people perceive, you know, the de facto process, and so we've given them power. We've empowered them.
I wonder if this would be helpful, is if there's a possibility of challenging, it might be too late for Brent right now in this court case, but maybe on the behalf of his son, that he can write a challenge of jurisdiction for them and they can sign it. I'm not even sure. Can a minor child have it notarized?
No. Your child can't go in and do that. No. He has every right to stand up for his child.
Yeah, but the problem is the way that the courts are right now.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. You know, we did a memo.
They're forcing to pay for a lawyer, so that if you can't pay for a lawyer, then you have no right. Your child has no right unless they pay for you can pay for an attorney, and that's the problem in the United States, and it leads back to the problem that we don't have common law court, and that's why we need to bring back the common law court, and I want to bring back the common law court back to the people, because then it's common sense for a parent to be able to speak on behalf of their minor child, because they're a minor child is by definition not able to legally stand on their own. and the parents have a legal standing. See, that's a, they'll challenge the standing of the parents, and say that they have to have a lawyer to represent them in court, which is, to me, even more stupid because, well, that lawyer has no relationship to the child whatsoever, but yet they get to speak on their behalf. It's really dumb. So we know it's ridiculous. We know it's a racket. We know it's a racket. But that's what they're really questioning is, like, yeah, you can speak for yourself in court, but we called your child here. You can't speak on behalf of your child. Like, that's really what it's about. So if I were him, I would challenge the fine for the child not being in court because that's what they're saying is default. They're defaulting. They're saying that the child defaulted by not being present in court.
Right. Well, that's why he's got to take it to federal court. That's the only thing he could do because they violated him. They denied his he denied his paperwork where he filed the challenge jurisdiction. You can challenge jurisdiction. Look, if they can say to you that you need to make a plea and you have to open your mouth to make that plea, well, you can open that mouth and challenge jurisdiction. And that's just common sense. But beyond that, and they know that, they just don't want to hear it. But beyond that, we have a right, an unalienable right to practice law. There's no such thing as a license to practice law. It doesn't exist anywhere. What they have is they got an approval from the bar. That's what they got. And they control the courts. You know, it's a monopoly. And all the judges they're all bar attorneys. Everyone's a bar attorney, so they control everything.
Yes, and that's where I totally agree with you on every point. But I wonder if the issue that needs to be confronted is the statement that licenses aside, just somebody else speaking on behalf of someone else. Like, so attorneys.
Well, there's a federal law. It's called, next friend, the right to be a next friend, and that gives you the right to stand and defend someone else. Also, you can come in and defend a group. That's federal law, and even though they try to hide it, I've never had that totally resisted in a federal court. They always try to pull that, you know, to get you a lawyer because they want a lawyer. They want a bar attorney that'll play ball. That's what they want.
Okay.
But nevertheless, the right to practice law is a common right. Here's a memorandum you can get that's in our course. And it's, let's see, on page 223 of the prerogative written mandamus to the United States Supreme Court. You click on that, and then you can find this memorandum. It's only 4 pages, but it lays out your right to be able to practice law. And
right.
You know, there's plenty of law to back it up.
Okay, well, I hope that Brent's still listening and heard what you said about next friend and that law. Can you quote that federal law? Can you point to it or where it is on site?
Next friend?
Yes, because at least
let's see. Let me see if I can find it quickly. Let me see where I go.
John, would you need a next friend for your own child?
Well, you can come in and call it being a next friend, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think what's happening is that they're telling parents that they cannot represent their own children, that they have to be, because if you're not, you can't represent someone else unless you're an attorney.
No, that's not true. That's something they made up and people believe and they go, but you can battle that and fight that. And that's at least one, look, if you're inside the court, you can win that one. And you just have to make your argument. But the judges, lawyers don't know. Okay, they believe what they're taught, and so they don't really know what's going on. And judges on that level that we're talking about, this is the village level, they haven't got a clue. So again, you know.
Now you.
Let me see. I'll look it up.
Now this. you have the parent-child guardian legal right to represent your child, your minor child in court. Right. And we know that, but unfortunately there's case law that says you can't.
And well, no, I don't know that there's case. I don't know that there's case law that says you can, but even if there is, it has nothing to do with us. Look, here's the next friend is a person who represents someone who is unable to attend to his or her own interest. Federal Rule of Civil Procedures, Rule 17 and 28 U.S.C.A. Next friend. And it reads here like this, Rule 17. Infants or incompetent persons, whenever an infant or an incompetent person has a representation such as general guardian, committee, conservator, or other the like fiduciary, example, the holding of something in trust for another, the representative may sue or defend on behalf of the infant or incompetent person. An infant or an incompetent person who does not have a duly appointed representative may sue by a next friend or by a guardian ad litem. The court shall appoint a guardian ad litem for an infant or an incompetent person not otherwise represented in an action, or shall make other such order as it deems proper for the protection of the infant or the incompetent person. So the only way that they can force representation is an incompetent person or an infant. But bear in mind, that's if they don't have a guardian, okay? Or, which would be the parent. This would be for a child. Now here, a next friend, one acting on behalf, well, that's pretty much saying it's the same thing. Here, next friend, this is a U.S. Supreme Court decision. A next friend is a person who represents someone who is unable to tend to his or her own interests. So your child cannot tend to his or her own interests. They're not capable of doing that. Although we should be teaching them this. If we had proper education by the time a child was 14 years old, they should have already gone through the course that we're given and should have this knowledge. Every American should have this knowledge to represent themselves, in any event, they can't stop you from representing yourself.
Okay.
Coming in on your own person, really. I wouldn't call it representing yourself.
But what they were saying is that the daughter should have come in and represented herself or been represented by an attorney, because it was not her. She was not speaking for herself. It was her father speaking on her behalf.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, you're telling me it doesn't matter, but to the court it does, and they're ruling against him, but they're coming out. I think the point, Jen, is that they're coming after the children. I mean,
okay, they are coming. They are. They are. There's no doubt about it. They're trying to take control. They've been trying to do this for a long time. Get rid of the parent, and ultimately the state makes the decision. And every time you go through a court case similar to this, and even worse, it's just one more, brick in the wall, so to speak. Okay, no doubt about it. But if you understand how the system works, and that's what we're teaching, if you understood due process, which is the whole process of the court from the very beginning of filing your first paper, which is the action, and bringing it all the way through all the motions and all the papers and the arguments and everything, and then finally to trial, and then at the trial. Once you understand all that, you understand all the motions and all the things you could do and all the appeals you could do during the process. Every time you disagree with a judge and the judge does the wrong thing, you can appeal that very specific thing as the court case continues on and have a higher court make a decision and make an order down to that court on the way things could go. Now, it's a very simple process to get out of a court. The problem is, people don't know what to do after they get out of the court. You go into court, you lay down the law itself. First of all, I write a paper and I send it in ahead of myself, when it comes to a traffic thing or something like that, or anything with any village court. I haven't gone in for anything else other than traffic, but anything, whether it's a village or a town court, doesn't matter. So you send a paper in, and the paper would be a challenge to jurisdiction. They don't have authority over your person. So they don't have personam jurisdiction. And of course, they're always looking at commercial codes or some other kind of thing, which has nothing to do with you. So they do have subject matter jurisdiction over certain things, but they don't have personam jurisdiction over you. So you challenge that. So you go into the court, And we learned the hard way. Every time we go into the court, they go through all these games, and you know, this, you go back the next month, and you keep going back the next month, and it just goes on forever. Well, we learned a long time ago now that you go into court once, you challenge jurisdiction. If the judge says he has jurisdiction, we ask him how did you get jurisdiction? You know, once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided, and the judge will turn to you and say, well, I decided. Well, how can you decide? There was nothing in the, in, you know, the prosecutor didn't respond, and they didn't write a paper. I'm the only one with an affidavit unrebutted, so, you know, rules of the court. You can't rule on just anything. You have to rule what's before you. So you didn't make a decision. It was not decided. A decider is someone who hears the case and makes a decision. And of course, ultimately, I guess they can try to make that decision, and then you can appeal that up. But the bottom line is once you leave the court, because they'll give you another court date, you know, you could just let the court know, well, I'm not coming back here anymore because I'm moving this to federal court for cause. And you get them put denying of due process. That's the key, the denial of due process. And then you write your papers, you file it in the court, you move it to federal court, you're done down there. You do a wherefore clause, you get some damages, and an order from the federal court for that court to cease and desist because they don't have power or authority over your person. And the case is over. Okay? But, you know, people keep going back to that court, back to that court, back to that court, and they don't know what to do. I appreciate that because I did the same thing. Okay? I didn't know what to do. Okay? But we learned as time went on. So you can get out of these things pretty quickly by moving it to federal court for cause. Now, the other problem people make is when they try to move it to federal, you know, you got to know what you're doing, and you have to understand due process. You have to understand the jurisdiction of the federal court. The federal court can't hear the case of whatever's being argued in that other court. The only thing they can hear is the constitutional challenge and the denial of due process, which is an injury, and the fact that they don't have personam jurisdiction over you, so you get your ruling from the federal court, cease and desist. It's over. So that's how you deal with this. And you could deal with board, school boards and all kinds of things. It's in this kind of a way. You know, we're doing a quo vanto, for instance, on a school board and moving that for enforcement when they don't produce their oaths, their bonds, and their financials. So there's a lot of things that could be done, but people don't know how to have government by consent. This is government by consent, okay? Government by consent is controlling your courts. Government by consent is controlling the courts ultimately through the juries, the grand juries and the trial juries. Government by consent is controlling the political process. Government by consent is controlling every single elected official that has anything to do with you from your election district. And you need to work with other people together in a coalition. And then back each other up and support each other, we need to take control. So, again, people don't know these things, and that's why we have a problem. And, you know, the children coming out of school are even worse than what we're in because they don't even know America. They don't know their rights. They don't understand anything. They understand only what these, you know, Marxist teachers teach them. They get out of these books, these Marxist books. So we have to step up and do something, and that's what we got to do.
Okay. So then, to summarize, your strategy for them coming after the children right now, for parents whose children are being charged with all sorts of crazy charges, such as two of his children.
Right. Well, I would make them pay through their teeth. I'll tell you, they wouldn't do it again. Take them to federal court and get some and sue them. You know, when you open a court of record, and that, you know, you're opening a court of record when you're doing the challenge to begin with anyway. And when you open a court of record, then the whole system changes. Of course, they don't want it to change. They'll ignore that. But again, you know, as long as you're not going up against the status quo on the federal level, you'll probably get decent treatment. And they're not worried about these people down in the villages and the town courts and stuff. Matter of fact, I think they look down at them with disdain, in my opinion, from what I've seen in courts, the way they treat the lawyers that come up to represent these people. They treat them with disdain.
I'm very surprised at that.
Okay.
And by the way, if anybody else wants to get into the queue, there's no one in the queue.
Say, John, the other part of the strategy, an important part for Brett and Mary Ann to know, is the development of committees of safety in your local area, in your county. That's another part of this strategy, big part.
Well, absolutely. You can't stand alone. You have to have forces with you. You have to have people with you. One person they don't care about. 10 people they usually don't care about. You get 50 people, they're worrying. You know, well, even 20 people, they're worrying to some degree. And it depends on how arrogant they are. And it depends how you handle it. And, dealing with a school board, you make sure the sheriff comes in with you or one of his deputies to serve the papers when they deny what you want them to do. Because you've got the school board, you know, the parents make the decisions. And the school board is supposed to exercise the will of the people. Okay, and what their education, what they want, what they don't want, they have to listen to. And if they don't, then that's when you serve the paperwork through a sheriff right there at the meeting. They'll start to take it very serious then. You could serve it yourself, but it's much more powerful if the deputy or sheriff, you know, does it.
Okay, so that's the strategy.
Oh yeah, and it's the same strategy over and over again. But again, people need to get educated, and we need to get our committees of safety going. And I'll tell you what, and I've mentioned this numerous times, but I don't think I can mention it too many times. If you want to grow your committee of safety, first order of business is one of the first committees you want to create is the educational committee, and start going after these education boards. Because when you go to one of those boards, you're going to pull in a whole bunch of people when they see what you're doing, and there's a plan, there's a process to do that, you know, on how you can get all of the families notice of what you're doing and have a meeting before you even go to the board meeting, have a meeting to discuss the problems, and you get a lot of parents and different people coming and get ideas, and you choose a speaker. And you make a plan, and you go to the plan board, and you just fill that room up with people. And when the people who are just learning about the Committee of Safety, who's going to the school board with you, because they got skin in the game, they have children and so on and so forth, so when they see what you're doing, they're going to learn, hey, this is the Committee of Safety, this is what we do, you should join up with us. You will grow tremendously, very quick. Every time you go to another school board in another district throughout your county, you're going to just pull in tons of people. You're going to grow very quickly. In a year, you're going to have lots of people. And then you'll have a lot of subcommittees dealing with political problems, judicial problems, educational problems, problems with the local courts, all kinds of problems you're going to be able to solve. And a matter of fact, you can shut down these courts. So, matter of fact, you could start, when somebody knows the law in the county and is confident, and you work together as a group, you can go after these town courts and force them to no longer go after people that are just driving their vehicles to travel from one point to another. They got the ability to only stop people in commercial activities that's on the road. They shouldn't be stopping you unless they feel you're a danger or something. Of course, they should be able to stop you, you're a drunk driver or something like that. But other than that, they don't have a right to stop you. But they only have a right to be able to give a ticket to someone driving commercially. And so once you start to enforce that on a town, what's going to happen? The whole thing's going to collapse. The court's going to collapse, and the whole police department is going to collapse, and that'll be an expansion of the sheriff's department, of course. But we'll get rid of all these code enforcers, which is what we want to do. Yeah. So, we're going to write a lot of papers and have a lot of discussions on these kind of things. Matter of fact, I'm hoping to really discuss this thing, particularly about education and talk about the educational problems. And so hopefully in the next couple of weeks we'll have a special Monday where we're going to do that. We're going to invite all of the people that are creating committees of safety. We have about 150 people out there that are working on building committees of safety. And so we want to get all those people up and, you know, representatives from each one of those committees and everyone else. And we should all be looking to do committees of safety or joining one that's existing, you know. You know, we all want to work together and look at a particular issue that we all have and find a solution. And we may find two or three solutions. You know, other people can write papers and come up with ideas and expound upon it. And then people could go back to their committees of safety and share the different ideas, and then each committee of safety can decide on how they want to go forward with this. And, of course, when they see success by one committee of safety doing it one way, of course, they're going to change their ways if theirs isn't as successful. So they'll start doing what others have done. You know, and this is how we got to do it. This is how we take control.
Yeah, it's like what you said right at the beginning when I first started taking courts of government by consent. Be the plaintiff. Find a way to countersue and be the plaintiff, and then you bring it back, bring it into the court of record, and get the upper hand on getting it into the proper court to defend yourself.
Well, that's exactly right. Yeah. So that's the key. Court of record and be the plaintiff. And if you're a defendant, be the plaintiff anyway. Mm-hmm. You countersue. But anyway, anything else?
No, thank you very much.
Hey, Gerard, you want to take the mic for a while? Hello, Gerard.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hey, you can hear you. You want to take mic?
Sure. Who's next? Kathy?
Yeah, just hit the next question button.
Okay,
there.
Let's see if this is going to work. Okay. Kathy, you have the mic.
Hi, Gerard.
Hey,
thank you. Because I was so busy helping me try to challenge jurisdiction in the criminal case that I was going to trial for on Wednesday the 14th. I totally missed another hearing that I had on Monday the 12th. So the other hearing was for some stupid traffic citation that never happened. A woman, coworker of mine back in 2020, she said we were driving home from work, and she said some ice blew off my car and broke her windshield, so she wanted my insurance information. She told me this at work about a week after it allegedly happened. And at any rate, this has been going on and on and on since then. I do have a public defender, but...
First of all, why did they even let it go so far? Look, you got 72 hours to report something to an insurance company, or you're finished.
Right. It's totally illegal what they've done, every step of the way.
I would ignore it. What are they going to do?
They've got a warrant out for me because I missed the hearing. This happened a year ago, and I was T-boned by some woman, and because I had a warrant out for my arrest, they put me in jail for 10 hours, and I had the bail money, and they still held me in jail for 10 hours. I don't want to repeat something like that.
This isn't even a criminal case. It's civil. How could they put you in jail? It doesn't make sense.
They say it's criminal because I allegedly left the scene of an accident without giving my insurance information. So that makes it criminal.
And that's based on her say-so, that she actually stopped
correct.
You? And she stopped you at the time the ice hit her, or what?
No, a week after it happened.
And
she even reported to the police. They had no... just cause to, they had no cause to give me a ticket. And
they gave you a ticket? The cops gave
you a ticket? They mailed me a ticket to my physical address. I was in the Safe at Home address confidentiality program, so I wrote return to sender wrong address. They never talked to me. They never told me anything. This just went to a...
Obviously, this person has an in with the police because this is totally outside of any
I know that.
Normalcy that you would be. I mean, I don't know, you know...
But this is the second warrant that's been issued for my arrest on the same ordeal.
This is a local court?
Say that again?
This is a local, like, town court?
Yes. County.
Yeah, jurisdiction. But let me ask you something, Kathy. Did you say ICE fell off your car and hit another car? I mean, what happened?
That's what she claims.
Okay.
And she even said in her report that she didn't think I was aware that it happened.
Yeah,
well,
so there's she denied
it in an affidavit, and now they got to prove it.
Yeah, I don't know who these cops are and the prosecutor is that they would be sending you.
But I've already spent 10 hours in jail from the last warrant.
I would sue
from
them.
The same case.
I would countersue everybody. Everybody. The lady, the cop, the judge, the prosecutor, everybody.
Well, I'm planning on doing that. At the last hearing, I told that I have a public defender, and I told the public defender that I want to question, because we watched the little video at the first hearing back in 2020. I watched a video that said I have a right to question all the witnesses on the stand. So I told the public defender at the last hearing about 3 weeks ago that that's what I wanted to do. So she said she would mail me. She said, well, it's up to the lawyer what we want to do as far as who we want to question. And I said, so then if I fired you, I could question the witnesses? And she said, yeah. And I said, okay, then that's – so she said, I'll mail you out the documentation, the complaint and everything, and then we'll talk and we'll decide what we're going to do. So anyway, that's why I missed the hearing, because we never talked. Yep.
Let me ask you a question, okay?
Yep.
It's a prosecutor that is pressing charges. It's not a lawyer hired by the other person. Okay, just challenge jurisdiction.
The prosecutor.
Move it to federal court for cause and sue. It's that simple.
Okay, what do I do about the warrant?
Well, you got to move. Once you move it to federal court for cause, you're looking for a cease and desist, and that's the other thing. They don't have the power, the authority. They don't have personam jurisdiction.
Okay. Well, I'll start working on that with Eric. Also, then we got three cases we're gonna challenge jurisdiction on. Then, all right. So if I get arrested in the meantime, I don't know. This is just. I know it's false arrest, John.
My
phone. All right, are we done, Kathy?
So what do you think I should do about the warrant? Nothing? In the meantime, they want me to go down there and sit all day and meet with the judge and have the judge assign me a different hearing date. Don't recommend I do it that?
Stop. If you think that they're not going to arrest you, then go do that. But if you think they're going to arrest you, don't do that. In either case, if you think they're not going to arrest you, go do that. And then when you leave, you file your papers to challenge move to federal court for cause, period. And if you think they're going to arrest you, then you don't go, then write your papers and bring them to federal court challenging that they don't have jurisdiction. A denial of due process.
Boy, they're really setting themselves up for a big lawsuit.
The public defender wouldn't tell me much at all. When this first happened, when I found out there was a warrant, and I called them, the public defender kept hanging up on me. She wouldn't even tell me anything except for that the bail was $300, so I carried around the $300 cash with me. They wouldn't answer any of my questions. They kept hanging up the phone. Now that I have a public defender, at least the public defender's assistant gave me some information that if I go to the court, because it's a misdemeanor, if I go to the courts before 8:30 in the morning,
finish that part. You have to go to court before 8:30.
Okay, if I go to the court before 8:30 in the morning, they've got a morning court, and then they've got an afternoon court.
Right.
And then I have to sit there to see the judge, and the judge appoints me another hearing date. And then once the hearing date is appointed, then my public defender will talk to me after that.
Okay, look it. forget about all that. You only have one solution. Move to federal court for cause. Again, to get off of the warrant problem, if you think you can go down there and they set a date and you're not going to worry about a warrant, then do that, because you don't want to have a warrant hanging over you.
How do they
but if you're paying, you gotta raise your volume if you can, because I can barely hear you.
Really?
Hmm. Yeah, you're coming in real low.
They issue a warrant if you miss a hearing, and I missed the hearing on the 12th of June.
Oh, I see.
All right, well, again, like I told you, there's two things you can do, one or the other. You know, again, if you can get rid of the warrant by going down and getting a court date, then do that. That's what you can do.
Okay.
If you're afraid they're going to arrest you, then you think you don't want to go down, well, that's fine, too. Either way, you're going to move to federal court for cause. You know, if
okay.
you... Get them to back off from the warrant by, going down and getting your date, and you can at least waste some more time in the court for a while you're learning more on the course to be able to do what you have to do.
And then in the other case, the one they dismissed on the 14th, I filled out an informal pauperis application because I want to get my entire file so that I can go back and sue everybody. That's for the allegedly violating the harassment restraining order against my husband, allegedly. And so they responded to my affidavit for, they denied my informal pauperis application because the case has been dismissed. I don't care if it's been dismissed. I want to get a copy of my file so I can go after those people.
Right. Well, that's what you're going to do.
If I do the same thing, call the court administration?
Everything is a battle with them, and that's the problem. But, again, you got to move things along. Hold on 1 minute. Gerard, why don't you see if you – did you able to raise your mic or something?
I tried. I don't know if you can tell the difference.
You're a little louder. Jan, Eric, what do you think?
I mean – I'm on a wireless set.
That's a little better.
Real low,
Jones. Hey,
maybe Kathy's a little loud.
She is a little loud, but
yeah.
But
yeah.
Gerard is a little low.
How about now when I move it closer to my mouth?
Yeah, that's good. That's good right there.
That's probably part of it. Okay.
Yeah, Kathy, maybe you can back off your mic because you're coming in really
okay. Low. Thank you. Okay, thank you.
Go ahead. You wanted to say something, Eric?
Yeah, Kathy, I'll be in touch. But, over the years I did non-judicial foreclosures and habeas corpuses. You know, I worked with Jim, right? The thing about Kathy, what's pretty impressive is her due diligence. Of all those habeas corpuses and non-judicial foreclosures, see, Kathy's been traumatized, and she experienced something when she was working for the city, and then she experienced this with her mother. So she was prepared. She could see this coming. And so she has more due diligence done and more evidence than I've ever even seen or heard of. So when it comes to doing her due diligence, she's an MVP. So this case of hers, I think it could really be something ultimately. Because she's got no end of evidence, and I mean hard evidence.
It sounds like a multi-million-dollar case, no doubt about it. The other one, not this one.
Yeah, and it could really lay out things. If we can get her through the process, it could really lay out things. And you know, those other organizations, like the one, the video she got you to post, we could teach all of them, and I think that might ultimately help us reach critical mass. Anyway, it's just an idea, but her due diligence is par excellence. It's just the best I've ever seen, and I yield.
Thank you, Eric.
My pleasure.
All right, back to you, Gerard.
Okay, I guess, are we done? You know what you're doing, and can we move on?
Yep.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for that.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
We'll see what happens. Keep us posted.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is John. I don't know where are you from, John?
Michigan. Michigan.
Well, okay, good. How's Michigan tonight?
Well, it's good up here. We finally got some rain. We needed rain.
Yeah, we too.
Hey, my question, I was just listening to her also on the habeas corpus, and I've got one of the cases in on habeas corpus in the big case in there, but what's the chances of enforcing that? I mean, you know, I've been reading a lot of book on the course on the common law and about habeas corpus, and I mean, obviously they're supposed to do this, and they're supposed to do that, and they're supposed to answer within 72 hours, whatever like that, and they have just absolutely ignored us. I know one time you talked about NORAD or whatever, one of those people using that and enforce the case at the Supreme Court. But, I mean, is that, you've talked about after devolution and stuff like that. Is there anything we do before that, at that point in time, to enforce this stuff?
The trouble is as far as they're concerned, you have no rights in their courts. And you're going to keep running up against this until we straighten that out, ultimately. They don't care. And there's also, they don't believe that there's any consequences for them. However, things have been heating up with some of the stuff that's going on and being revealed. It's going to get, look, timing is everything. There are certain things that have broken loose because of the timing and mm-hmm. what's going on right now. So certain cases, the judges are not necessarily willing to just willy-nilly, you know, go along to get along with, especially when it's obviously blatant, like this case we were just talking about. That stuff is blatantly wrong, and I'm surprised that they're even still doing it, because if you look at what's going on, you can see that there's consequences right around the corner. And
one of the problems though, Gerard, is these guys are village court judges and town court judges, and they have no understanding of the law whatsoever, and they probably have no clue on what's going on outside. I think maybe on the state courts and possibly the county courts, you're probably right. Federal courts, forget about it.
Well, they should know. They just don't care, because they still think they're Teflon when they're not. When a couple of them go down, they'll get it really quickly. And
well, one question I have is, you know, if we talk about even like the Board of Education, you go in with a writ of mandamus and a quo warranto, asking for their bond in that, something like that. Isn't it possible to do that in a federal court? I mean, could be if we had a sheriff with some large cojones.
Well, if you're going after oaths and bonds, that should be taken care of right there. You shouldn't have to go to federal court for that.
Well, no, I'm talking about the Matt Hale, and we put a motion in for a writ of habeas corpus in about 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago for him, and they just ignored it. And I've got another buddy who's in jail right now, a local jail.
We filed hundreds, and they've ignored most all of them. I mean, we had a couple successes, but most of them were ignored because they're criminals, they're evil, and they just don't want to let go of their power and their authority. And they don't want habeas corpus. They don't want the common law. They don't want common sense. They want the status quo, and that's that. They don't care about nothing else. But I'll tell you, when it comes to the Board of Election, okay, I don't think we have to wait to get to the other side of devolution. Not the Board of Election. I mean the election. The education.
Board of Education.
Yeah. When it comes to those things, or even local towns. It's a very simple procedure to file a quo warranto on them, and then, you know, because you're going to quote law on that, and you have it served by the sheriff or one of the sheriff's deputies, of course. You have it served at the meeting, and then if they fail, then you just run. There's a process, there's a procedure, there's a code. You just apply the code, you bring it into the court. They fail to give it, and you go through the process. And at the same time, you go to the at some point, you're going to get a hold of the bonding company, and you're going to go after the bonding company to sue the individuals.
Precisely, but does not the federal courts and federal judges also have a bond, and won't they be under the same rule?
Every elected official or appointed official that takes the oath has a bond.
So have we ever put a quo warranto in on the federal courts for the federal judges?
Well, yeah, we've done quo warrantos before. They ignore them too. They ignore the people everywhere you go. They just ignore you. They don't care because they're totally in control. They got the guns, and there ain't nothing you could do about it.
Well, there's no sheriff that has the cunis to arrest a federal court judge.
Yeah.
Break out in a rash before he ever did that. You know, the only way that that's going to happen ever is if you do your committees of safety and you get like tri-county, three counties together to go in there, then you might have some success. And you know, this case that's going through with Gill, I think that's going to break things open even more, because it's showing that the corruption, the higher you get, the worse it is. You know what I mean? It's just ridiculous with all these ABC agencies. So I think, you know, in another month or so, they're going to understand what's going on. You know, they're going to be, and not only that, technically they have no authority. They're broke. They're bankrupt. Whether you know what I mean? They're going into, listen, raising the debt ceiling did absolutely nothing, because nobody's going to accept the money. It's going to be like the Weimar Republic. They have to put a new money system in, or they have to start World War III. That's their two options of escape at this point. And so I don't know. We'll see what happens. But I think you're going to see a lot of changes very shortly as these cases come through, you know?
Well, they're all being bribed with this.
They're bribed before they get. Not only are they bribed, they're blackmailed and extorted.
All the above. But they're bribed with money that's losing value like a stone right now. And when the money is not worth anything, who's going to accept the bribe? You know what I mean? That's the other thing.
That's it. And the evidence is out there. This Gill that's putting it into the court really, really has good stuff. And he has kind of a bully pulpit now. So I think you're going to, as time goes on with all these, with the unveiling of everything and the showing of the corruption, it's going to be much easier to run these cases now. I mean, I don't know. I have no idea what form it's going to take, but when the time is right, you're going to know it. Everybody's going to know it. There's going to be a big, you know, you're going to see the shift when they start actually obeying the law, you know. And it's going to require getting rid of everybody. It's going to require getting rid of most of the judges, the Congress and the Senate. They're not even a valid Congress and Senate right now. It's
1871, right?
It's all pantomime. It's all show. Look, there was fraud. Fraud vitiates everything. Everything they say and everything they do is null and void. I mean, Marbury versus Madison is in effect. You know what I mean? So I don't know how that's going to end up. I don't pretend to know. I just know that it is moving forward, and it will, and it is going to end, that it's game over. And this time is different than the other times that it was tried, because they're actually doing it on a worldwide basis. The leaders of these countries are sick of these people, and they want to get them out. So, you know, they've tried it in the past. That's why we lost. That's one of the reasons we lost Lincoln. It's one of the reasons they killed Kennedy. Look, they just bury whoever they don't like. But we're at the point that, you know, they're not able to get away with that anymore. And one of the reasons they're not able to get away with it is their funds are all locked up. They have no money. And with no money, they have no power. And whether you know it or not, that's what's going on, that they go into their account. You know, we hear these horror stories about how they're going to shut our accounts and you're not going to get money out. Well, I think it's already happening to some of them because of that executive order that was put in, that Biden left in, about if you help the enemy, if you had anything to give aid and comfort, that we can come and get all your assets. And they've been operating that for 3-4 years now. And you don't hear a lot about it because they want to keep it quiet, because they don't want all these guys panicking and running into the bushes, so to speak. You know what I mean? And they've been taking them out. They've been taking their bank accounts out. So they've been stopping the illegal human trafficking, which is, they make most of their money on that. That's bigger than drugs, whether you know it or not. So look, we live in exciting times, and it's just going to take some. You don't even need a whole lot of patience, because we're at the climax now. You know what I mean? You're gonna see things come out every couple of days, new revelations. You know, and I don't know at what point it'll actually climax. Where, I mean, we could actually move into martial law in the initial stages, because it's actually, look, the only answer really is the military. Under a civilian president, that's the best answer, because these guys, they own the courts, they own the judges, and that's all been proven now. All that evidence is on the table. So like Trump said, how are you going to have 2023 when you haven't fixed 2020? And I do believe he still believes that. He's just playing the game right now, you know?
Hey, did you hear what Matt Gaetz's committee is doing, moving to get rid of the ATF?
You're talking to me?
Well, all of us, basically.
I was asking Gerard particularly.
No, I didn't hear that they're moving to get rid of the ATF.
I watched it. Just came out, I think just a couple hours ago or a couple of days ago, Matt Gaetz and his committee. I'm not sure what committee he's on.
Under what guise? Listen, we know the ATF is no good, generally speaking.
Well, if you go onto YouTube and put in Matt Gaetz, you'll pick up. It's just something recent. And they're moving to get rid of him because they're abusing their powers. They're really not needed. They don't really have the power to go after people with guns the way they do. Every case they have is really unjust. What do they have to do with the alcohol and the tobacco anyway? You know?
Well, so I wonder.
Bottom
if
line is they're really working for the Federal Reserve.
And I'm wondering if this is not something to distract us from something bigger. Well, usually when they come out with something that sounds really good, it's because they don't want you to pay attention to something like the crimes they have on Biden, let's say, junior and senior. They really would like to put that under the table, and they're having a hard time with it. They can't. So, we're going to get rid of the ATF, and, there's
a... Well, Matt Gaetz is a good guy. I mean, I'm sure
I know he is, and I respect whatever he's doing or whatever he thinks he's doing.
And they do have to go. I think they're really loading up on all of the problems and pushing hard. I really see that.
Look, this has been how long? We had Ruby Ridge, and we had all these other things that have happened. I mean, we don't need any more evidence. The evidence is already self-evident, so to speak. And we just need somebody that has the wherewithal to stand up, you know. And you never could do that before because they would just kill you. They would just murder you. I mean, Mike Gill, they've three times he's got it on tape where they came in to try to kill him. Because for him, look, they tried to give him $50 million how many times and he refused to take it. Well, the next step is they kill you, just like the economic hitman. They go in, they make you an offer. If you don't take it, then they get the jackals to assassinate you. Saddam Hussein was one of their jackals. He was trained in the School of Americas. He knew exactly what was going on when he said he wasn't going to accept American dollar for petroleum anymore. So he had seven body doubles at any time. They couldn't get him. So that's why the next step is they start war with your country. That's their MO. They're not going to get away with it no more. These countries are not going to put up with it. And they got a rude awakening right now. Their operating system has been compromised. The rug has been pulled out.
Yeah, they're being exposed. So.
And
how close are we?
And I think it's going to be sooner than you think. You know what I mean? It's going to happen. It's going to be like, you know, once the domino falls, the first domino, it doesn't take long for the other ones to go one right after the other. And that's what you're going to see. And I believe, anyway, that's my opinion, looking at, you know, you get back and look at the 30,000-foot view, and there's so much. Look, they're suffering the death of 1,000 cuts right now. Of course, they try to use that to their advantage because, you know, even when they let something good out, they're hoping that you have information overload. You know, so a lot of times when they're screaming about something with the right hand, you got to look and see what's going on in the left hand that they don't want you paying attention to. They do it all the time, you know. So,
yeah.
You know, look, it's time to pray because, believe it or not, that works probably better than anything, and it's what they fear the most because they can't stop it. You know what I mean? It's beyond them. And look, we know who wins in the end. God wins in the end. That means we win in the end, as long as we're on God's side. And it's becoming more and more evident that this is a fight between good and evil. And it's a choice that each person's going to have to make. And they're bringing it to a head. Look, if you're dealing with Satan, what does he do? He's going to force you to step on one side of that line or the other, only because he has to. I mean, in the past, it's always gray. I mean, he didn't want you to stop, you know what I mean? He just wanted things to be confusing so he could get more people. Well, those days are over because now they're being called, you know, everybody's taking, what do you want to call it, attendance on who's on what side. And you're going to see a lot of these people, especially in the Congress and the Senate. You remember, what was her name that just brought up the impeachment of Biden, articles of impeachment?
Marjorie Taylor Greene.
There's only one reason she did that. It's nothing's going to come of it. It's impossible because you got the Democrats are controlling the House. The reason is again, Trump is playing his 3D chess, and it's not just Trump. This is military intelligence. This is the whole white hat side. They're going to be forced to vote for or against that article. That's going to put them on one side of the line or the other, and that's exactly what it's designed to do. They're going to hold that over their heads. And so, again, they fall into another trap set for them. And they just about took every trap that was set for them, hook, line, and sinker. It's like they can't resist. So, you know, by forcing them to vote whether to impeach or not impeach, listen, if I was an evil Democrat at this point, knowing what I know, I would vote to impeach him because it's I'm going to protect my skin before I protect his skin. So I would know that if I vote to impeach him, they'll think I'm one of the good guys. They won't get to me right away. That's how I think. I don't know, you know. And I think more and more these evil people are going to figure that out. You know, and you may even look at it, if they do impeach him, that means they're in trouble because they're never going to let that happen until the bloody end. So, you know, we need to do more than impeach any. Look at the whole Congress and Senate is under misprision of treason. They're all null and void. Fraud vitiates everything. Everything they do is a lie. It's smoke and mirrors, and it's all about, you know, scaring us. And bringing us to this near-death experience, you know, they're going to try with like another Cuban Missile Crisis. All that. Look, there's going to be no nuclear war. They've already made agreements that they're not going to throw nuclear weapons between the leaders of all these countries. That's what Trump did in his first term. He went from country to country and worked out deals with these people. Now, yeah, sometimes they fall through, but the trouble is. There's too many people on board. So if you're not gonna follow the deal you made, now you're a target and your country's a target. And it's that big. So it's gonna be look at that the old Chinese curse is what? May you live in interesting times. Well, we are living in interesting times.
Well, you got that right.
To say the least. And like I said, I don't think you're gonna have to wait long. It's going to be every day is a new reveal. Every single day, something else is going to come out. It's going to get breakneck speed. It's almost overwhelming now if you're following everything, you know. So I don't know. I expect to see some good stuff. And one of the indicators I think that you can look for is when you start seeing more local success in things, and that's why it's important to get these committee of safeties going, because I think that that's going to be the first cracks in their system is when each community steps up to the plate and takes their government back. And that's, you know, the federal government knows that if they don't have a place to put their foot down in the counties and the states, they're done. They're done. They, like Tip O'Neill said, not that I like Tip O'Neill, but he said, all politics starts at local. And who else knows that? George Soros knows that, doesn't he? Isn't that where he spent over, I don't know how many million dollars to get that one sheriff in? Oh, the sheriff's nobody. He's Andy Mayberry. He's a fool. He's this, he's that. But yet George Soros will spend $2 million to get this guy in because he knows he's the most powerful law enforcement official that can stop all that election fraud. All he's got to do is bring his deputies in. He has the power of posse comitatus, and he could deputize. They fear the sheriff. They would love to do away with the sheriffs, and some states have, and we've been kind of working on that. But and that's why, because look at he's the highest elected law enforcement official. You know, your state troopers and stuff. Their commissioner is appointed by the governor. They're the governor's private police force, you know. So, yeah. And they always want us to think that the sheriff is like, you know, is like Barney Fife or something, you know? And whatever they're putting out there, even in the movies and stuff, you can pretty much do the opposite and be safe, because that's, you know, they're pushing an agenda to kind of take the credibility away. But if you think about it, it makes sense that the local sheriff, who's elected by we the people, would have more authority than even the FBI in your county. Think about it. What does the FBI know about your county?
Really? Well, I know we're working hard here in Michigan, and specifically with DAR. So I mean, that's if we know which direction you want to go, he'll work with us. So that's a good thing here. We're working hard on. So.
Well, I think that even DAR is going to be more have more resolve as things become clear. I mean, first of all, you can't have DAR out there, the only sheriff, you know, going after judges and stuff. That isn't going to work. It's suicide. But if you get a couple of counties, a couple of states, even better, together, they're done. They can't hold up to it. I mean, look at some of the stuff that Sheriff Mack did when he was in his heyday. He challenged them and sued them, and they found for him, because they understand that when you start denying the power of the people through the sheriff, that you're talking civil war, you're talking revolution, not civil war, you're talking revolution, basically.
Hey, Gerard.
Yeah.
Gerard, you got a few more people in the queue. It's getting late.
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry. I got off on my soapbox here. But anyway, that's my opinion there, John. So let's move on.
I'll let you go. Thank you.
Okay. Looks like Ross is the next call.
Hello, this is... How do we get rid of the teachers' union, or the unions that represent the teachers in the school districts across the United States?
I'm sorry, say that again. Look at your mic, is so loud. It's like it's very hard to hear you. If you could turn it down or get a little further away. How did we get rid of what? I'm sorry. The teachers' union, what? I didn't quite get that.
Represents the teachers.
Now you're a little too low. Turn up just a little bit. I'm sorry. I'm like.
I was saying the teachers. How do you get the unions out of the education system that represents the teachers?
Well, the teachers' union is in there by virtue of the teachers voting for it. And how do you get rid of them? Well, there's, you know, how do you union bust, you know? There's many ways of doing it. I don't know what the best way is, though, you know. The fact of the matter is everything they're doing is unconstitutional against the law and violating parents' rights. The best thing to do is work with your school boards, because it's the school board that controls the curriculum and all this other crap that comes in. So, yeah, the teacher union may be funding and driving it, but the point of control is with the school board. And they want you to think the school boards don't have power. Well, they do. And so I would think that, you know, other than voting in more conservative representatives, where the rubber meets the road is the people going to the school board meetings and laying them out. You know, I mean, teachers have got, you know, some unions are ridiculous. You know, they got crazy benefits, and they get away with stuff that's just beyond. And the only way you're going to get rid of it is to challenge them. Well, how do you challenge a teachers' union? You know, you're not going to challenge the union directly, because they're going to say, we have a right to form a union.
There was someone else before.
And they do, if you think about it. But they cannot be using it to violate the Constitution, which they do. So if you stick to the fundamental basics, it takes a crew of people. You can't do it alone. You can't do it with two people. You have to start a movement. So the best thing to do is figure out what's going on that the parents are most upset about in school. And look at these teachers' union and these school boards, They operate best in the dark. When nobody's watching them, that's when they do their best work. As soon as the people start looking at them, then they turn tail. And believe me, they're doing a lot of violations that, I mean, if you start looking into it, you'll find out that they're probably violating the open meetings law and all kinds of things that we've seen on different groups like Bonds for the Winds and stuff like that. So, again, your committees of safety and having a group of people is probably the best way that I can think of. You know what I mean? Because they're very well-funded teachers unions, you know?
So, yes. The problem that also the teachers unions help get the teachers better pay, but the taxpayers are the ones who pay the salary.
Right. And they have their union dues too. You know, look at they're supposed to work for us, but that's, you know, they don't necessarily believe that. They believe that we're too stupid to manage the money or to tell them what to do. You know. So, you know, a lot of this is due to our own fault by giving them such a free hand for so long. So, that's the best advice I can give you. I don't know, you know. They're going to be a hard one to put down because they're practically a communist organization, really. You know, and they use a lot of those subversive tactics, too. So, I haven't seen anything on as far as specifically of anybody getting rid of them by a certain method. I think the best method is that the parents need to get involved. And, you know, hopefully that will happen. The COVID really gave us a leg up because people took their kids out of school and they're homeschooling them, and a lot of people didn't go back. But anyway, I got to move on. I got two more people I'd like to get to, and I only got a few minutes here. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, Walt from New York. What's up? My home state.
Oh, that's right. I hope John's listening to it. Are you there, John?
He's still in the board, so.
He's here.
Yeah, because I was going to ask him. He had a sore throat last week and was talking about oregano oil. He's talking about spreading it through the air, but I told him put it under the tongue. It works immediately. He sounds pretty good today. So I hope he did that. But anyway, all this corruption going on, Gerard, in the courts, government, and everything like that, President Kennedy talked about it in 1961 in the Waldorf. He was saying it was a communist issue, secret society, and it's going on. You can't see it. They're reprogramming our mind, and they're doing things without our awareness. But I can tell you this. If you just look at a couple things, I've already experienced this in the courts myself. I'm in courts all the time. Mm-hmm. Not in the buildings, but through paperwork.
Right.
Now, I'll tell you this right now before I go to what I want to tell you. I have a case that I petitioned for President Trump to the U.S. Court of Federal Claims, a lawsuit in his behalf. They took my case after, because I know what's going on, and I presented it to the court, and they sent me a letter back unsigned saying, "Thank you for your correspondence. We understand you do not want to file a lawsuit." As soon as I saw that, I called the court the next day and talked to the clerk. I said, "What's going on?" And I said, "No, I do want to file the lawsuit for President Trump." And I said, "If you're going to answer in a negative, then sign the paper." He said, "Yes, sir." So I resent it. And the same thing happened, Gerard. They sent an identical letter saying, "Thank you for your correspondence. We understand you don't want to file a lawsuit." I left it at that. I don't do computers. I can't. I'm busy all the time. Here's what I did for President Trump. But first, I want to tell you to look this up. You'll see what's going on. If you look under legal definitions, look under the United States. What is the legal definition of the United States? It's going to tell you it's a corporation. Mm-hmm. The United States of America, look up the legal definition of the United States of America. You will not find it. It's gone. That's because there was a bankruptcy approximately 1938. And there's a bankruptcy treaty going on right now where the international bankers took over this country. They stole it. And they replaced the United States of America with a corporation in the United States. And they got rid of the original Constitution for the United States of America because of the this unlawful treaty. And what they did, though, with the first 10 amendments, all the amendments, or what they did was they actually went into the rotunda in every place in Washington, D.C., where the original amendments were placed after they were signed in 1791, and they stole them. All the original amendments are gone. You can't find them. And they replaced it with another set of the same amendments, but not signed by any of the original 13 states. So you have no constitutional rights. When you go in the courts today, that's why you see all this. No rights at all. We're farm animals. No different than farm animals. And you have no, like, amendment rights, any of those. You don't have any of those because they don't exist, technically. So here's what you...
Just let me finish before you object.
Let me tell you what President Trump case. What I said was this. I am directing this court to summon President Trump to come into your court as a citizen of the United States of America and a president of the United States of America, and his attorneys are to suspend their bar licenses and come in as common law constitutional counsel. And once they do that, they can't throw him out. He has to have his day in court. And I can prove this to you right now, Gerard, because it happened to me. Here's what I did. When you go into the courts, they demand that you take an attorney. I was falsely arrested one time in Spencerport, New York, about 7 years ago. I said, I'm not taking any attorneys. I says, Almighty God, his Hebrew name is Yahweh, is my attorney. The judge wrote it down, but he says, no, you're going to take this attorney. I'm going to appoint. I says, no, you're not, judge. Yahweh is my attorney. So what he did, Gerard, is I'm going to tell you this. Take 3 minutes, and you're going to see what's going on, who we're up against. It's all smoke and mirrors, all right? He finally said, okay, I want you to come back in 2 weeks, Walt. If you don't come back, we're going to get a warrant and have you arrested. I said, fine. So I came back in 2 weeks. This time I was the last case in court. Usually when you go in that court, there's 50 cases or more. They start at 5 o'clock, get out at 8. All right? They don't want the people to hear what I was going to say. So they had this other public defender there, big guy. He walks up. He's going to represent me in front of Judge Morenti. And he says, I want you to take this attorney. And I said, sir, I don't want. As soon as I started speaking, that attorney, that public defender, says, I advise you, sir, not to say anything. And I told Judge Morenti, I said, I don't want this man as my attorney. I want him fired or something to that effect. I said, sir, I told you, Judge Morenti, I told you before, 2 weeks ago. I said, Almighty God, Yahweh is my attorney, and here's how I'm going to prove it. He can be my attorney. He wrote it down again. He said, I want you to come back in 2 weeks, Walt. If you don't come back, we're going to have you arrested. So 1 week later, I had to go downtown to that office to show documents, Gerard, that the court's involved in mail fraud with the postmaster in Spencerport, New York. Caught him doing it. So I went in a conference room with the top attorney there and this beautiful lady, Miss Ball, public defender. They're trying to get me to take her the next time I go to court. And I tried to tell her all the crimes this judge is committing, and I had a recorder on, and had Mr. Stubbe there, the top attorney, started babbling real loud, actually yelling in there, so I can't record. I'm trying to report the crimes to this counsel, Ms. Ball. So they said, we're just going to see you in court. Anything? No, I'll tell you what I did say to the man. Top attorney in Rochester, New York, for the public defenders. I said, Mr. Stubbe, if you don't stop what you're doing, I yelled in his face, 2 feet from him, Gerard, yelled in his face. I said, if you don't stop what you're doing, Almighty God, Yahweh's going to remove you from his kingdom on this earth. He didn't say a word. I yelled louder the second time. His reply, Gerard, was, anything else, Mr. Wojcik? I said, no, nothing else needed. So here's what happens. Are you ready for this, Gerard? And a week later, I go back to the court the third time. I'm the last guy pulled up again. There must be at least 50 cases before me. Miss Ball steps up to me, and she goes, good evening, Walt. And I said, good evening, Miss Ball. And Judge Morenti knows all this, and he says this. He says, oh, I see you know each other. And I said, Judge Morenti, you know very well, when you set me up with a beautiful woman like this, how am I going to pay attention to you, sir? He ducked his head. He's embarrassed because he knows he's trying to get me to take this attorney. So he says, I want you to take this attorney. I said, I'm telling you for the last time, Judge Morenti, Almighty God, Yahweh is my attorney. And here's what he said. He said, okay, in 6 months, if I don't hear anything in this matter, I'm going to dismiss this case. He never said, it's on the recorder, he never said anything I did. Now, I'm going to tell you what happened. At this last day of the 6 month, Gerard, I hope John is listening, I emailed Judge Marenti to Webster Public Library. They had this simple email machine. I can't do computers. I said, Judge Marenti, I am directing you so you're not going to dismiss this case till the truth comes out that I was falsely arrested. Never heard from him again. And then when I applied for an apartment in Canandaigua, New York, just 2 years ago, now this is 7-8 years after the case, they did a background check of me, and there's no record I was ever arrested. So here's what happens now. I'm going to tell you why Judge Marenti dismissed the case. Because I took, here's what it is. When you go before a judge, please listen to this. It'll take me 3 minutes to tell you. This is the whole thing going on, the corruption. When you go before the judge, he'll say you have a right to an attorney. I want you to take this attorney. If you don't take the attorney and you stay, no, I'm going to take my creator. That in the courtroom, and you don't take the attorney, they have no jurisdiction. And they're going to try every way they can to get you not to take the almighty creator as your attorney and your birthrights in that courtroom. So what you say to the judges when they want you to take the attorney, here's how you expose the whole thing, Gerard. Here it is right here, all of it, the whole problem. You say, Judge, where do you get the authority to tell me I have a right to this man standing here, this licensed attorney? Where do you get it? He's not going to want to tell you. He says, please take the attorney. I said, sir, I'm directing you, Judge. Where do you get the authority? He'll come up with a distraction, say, Gideon versus Wainwright, Supreme Court case, you have a right to an attorney. I said, where does it say that in a Gideon case or anywhere that I have a right to an attorney? It doesn't, Gerard. Look in the Sixth Amendment. It says you have a right to counsel. And it's not spelled C-O-U-N-C-I-L. It's spelled C-O-U-N-S-E-L. Means information we have a right to. So you say, Judge, it isn't the attorney, the person I have a right to. It's information. What is that information I have a right to right before you right now, Judge? He's not going to want to tell you. So you say, Judge, I'm going to tell you. Is your recorder on? He'll say yes. And I say, sir, isn't it the Declaration of the 13 States? I have a right to life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, and counsel from the Almighty right now in this courtroom. He won't deny it. He'll say, yes, I do. I said, sir, then why do I want to take this attorney? Because the minute I take him, you say I gave up those rights that you're hiding from me. Then I'm not part of that corporation, the Bar Association, and it's a different authority in the courtroom. And what it is, Gerard, is this. If you don't give up your inalienable birthrights, you're protected by the Almighty Creator. But if you take the license, attorney, okay, the Almighty is saying to you, whether you know it or not, okay, now you're committing a violation of the First Commandment, having other gods before me. I would have protected you in the courtroom, Walt. So you want to take the attorney instead? You take the attorney, and here's what happens. Gerard and John, please hear this. It's the truth. I can prove it with documents. And I'm going to tell you about another case real quick. It's even worse with President Trump. Okay, here's what happens. If you take the licensed attorney, you're under the Bar Association. He has no oath of office. He has no constitutional rights either because he sold out. And how I know this is because I have two oaths myself, John and Gerard, Air Force and Post Office. It says right on my oaths, I can't purchase this appointment to defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. When you get a license to practice law, you can't defend the Constitution. You're sold out. That's what the Bar Association is. Practicing law is solely practicing ways to destroy the Constitution. But here's the bad part. When you take the licensed attorney, you have the courtroom is not a vacuum, a spiritual vacuum. When you gave up Almighty God, Yahweh, in the courtroom, you can't see God in the courtroom. He's a spirit. But he's there, because we're talking about him. And before the bankruptcy, the judge used to come out of the back room every time the bailiff says, all rise. He had the Bible held up with his right hand. That was the spirit in the courtroom before the bankruptcy in 38. That's gone now. So now when you give up Almighty, the mighty God Yahweh and take the licensed attorney, it's not a vacuum. There's another spirit in the courtroom. And who is it? It's not the Creator going to protect you. It's this. Apostle Paul says it in Ephesians 6. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, but spiritual wickedness, rulers of darkness in high places. You actually have the devil in the courtroom in the spirit. And how I noticed, too, is, real quick, that one case I'm going to tell you about that was in Spenceport. I was helping. He took an attorney. He wanted a jury trial. And he demanded a jury trial, but there was no live jurors in the courtroom, Gerard and John. None there. And I got witnesses signed affidavits that saw this. But then after the case, he was found guilty, this young man. And it was a traffic cases, no license, no insurance, all his business. So then the what the young man was smart enough to do this. He says, Judge, can I have the disposition of your court order? I was found guilty by the jurors, but here there's no jurors sitting in the jury box. So the judge is saying the jury found him guilty on the recorder. So the young man said that was found guilty, can I have a copy of your court order? He never got it. He asked three times. And the reason is, John and Gerard, is because the jury foreman can't sign the guilty verdict on the paper because they're spirits. So when you take a licensed bar card attorney in the courtroom, you're working under the devil in there, the spirits in there, found guilty. So that means this. He never got the court order. Three times he requested it, and he never paid the fine, and they never went after him because he won the case. The case had to be ditched, hidden. So he had no license, no insurance, and no plates on the car. They found him guilty on a recorder, but there's no court order with the jury foreman finding him guilty. So that's what I'm saying. There are two governments you're not going to find with the definition of the United States of America. That's the real sovereign government under the Almighty Creator. And George Washington said it. He says, well, in the preamble and everything, he signed it in the day of our Lord, and we receive blessings, and we're ordaining this Constitution. It was a sovereign religious ceremony, that Constitution. But now after the bankruptcy, it was replaced with a bankruptcy treaty, the Constitution of the United States. That is a corporation, and their Constitution looks the same and everything, but it's not. You have to take a licensed attorney, and they replace all your rights with privileges, and you have to pay for it with counterfeit paper shekels. So yeah. You got two governments. So if you go into court, here's what you, all you need to say, that guy Brett there with the daughter there, if they're going to treat her as a criminal, 14-year-old, then she has a right to counsel, and he can go in there, the father, and protect your constitutional rights. They can't throw him out for that. They can only throw him out if he's going to, yes, I'm practicing laws and authority, but he says, I'm not here to practice law. I'm here to defend her constitutional rights. So here's the last thing I'm going to say, if I can remember. I just forgot it, but it's very important. So you go into court, here's what you say. For any case, it does not matter. You say, I'm here on special appearance, Judge, and I'm going to tell you your recorder on. You'll say, yes, I'm not going to subject myself or my property to this bankrupt proceeding that's under the United States Corporation communist entity. It's a foreign entity run by the international bankers and the Federal Reserve in this country. That's what you say, and they have no jurisdiction, and what are they going to do? Then they're going to have a serious problem, because if they're still going to try to get after you, then you start reading scripture at them, say, well, then look, you're trying to overrule Almighty Yahweh in this courtroom. You're not going to do it, and he's going to remove you from the planet. You just tell the judge right to his face, and I told Judge Morenti himself, I said, Judge, you keep this up. Yahweh's going to take you behind the woodshed and kick your behind. And he didn't get the cops after me. What he did, Gerard and John, was he wrote down right in front of everybody, and his clerk up on the bench hit her head. She was laughing. She thought it was so funny. And the guys are running out of the courtroom in the parking lot saying, there's this one guy getting after the judge. How is he doing it? Because you bring in Almighty God, Yahweh, our Father, in the courtroom. They have no jurisdiction if you say that. If you give up your birthrights and Almighty Yahweh in the courtroom, and you go under the Bar Association authority, they've already sold out. They don't have any constitutional rights.
That's one of the reasons that every case we put in, the whole front of it is explaining what a court of record is, who it's under, what the jurisdiction is. Now, there's somebody else used to do what you're saying. It's late, and I got a phone call, so I have to go. I think it was, his name was Carl Lentz, and that's what he would do. He would say very short stuff, like when they were trying to take somebody's child. He said, I demand the return of my property. He didn't say a lot, but he would quote scriptures, and they never argued with him. So I know that there's some truth to that, because you're dealing with a evil cabal. Now, that's not to say that you won't get an ignorant judge that you know, he'll say, oh, you're always going to take me to the woodshed. That's a threat. What are you threatening my life? Blah, blah. You know what I'm saying? That's something that could happen. You got to be careful. You know.
Well, there's one more final thing, Gerard. Please let me say this. I hope John's there. It gets very exciting, and we'll never be the same when we find this out, who those people are, who they really are. Behind the scenes. If you sue the United States Corporation, you only see attorneys representing them. You won't see the people who run it. And they control even President Trump. They threw him out of court so he can't have his case about the voting. You remember that? But now I'm going to leave this with you, and I'm going to call you again in the future. You're going to love this. And I can't stop being happy every day when I tell people about it. Okay? All right. Just say this. If King David was alive today, or his descendants, after King David would help Israel all the time, the fourth thing, when he was president, he's always helping Israel, doing all these things, and then President Trump gets in trouble. It's right in the scriptures that the Almighty says that Israel and King David would return the favor and do anything for Donald Trump as long as he wasn't doing anything wrong, which certainly will help you. Then here's the question. After everything President Trump did, why isn't that state of Israel coming to Donald Trump's aid now and telling those nine justices, if King David was alive today, the real King David or the true descendants, the chosen Israelites, and they saw what was happening to Donald Trump today, if Donald Trump helped King David, they would go tell those nine punk judges in Washington, D.C., those justices, if you don't allow President Trump to come in court to hear his case, we're not telling you what to say, but just to hear it, if you don't do it, judges, we're going to remove you from planet Earth now. They would be on the news and say it. So why isn't anybody coming to Donald Trump's aid? They don't say that, not a peep. And that nation over there, their flag was parked 6 inches from the communist flag. You can look it on the internet. They're secret communists.
Christ talked about them, and they're secret Jews. They call themselves Jews, but they're not really Jews.
Yeah, so here's the one more thing, Gerard, you're going to love is I'll let you go. I know you got to go. Just look at this. I talked to everybody about it. There's a $2,000 challenge. Just look in, and when Cain, the murder of Abel, here's how you can find this out. You can push back the curtain to start to see what's really going on and who the evil ones are. And they're not just spirits. They're flesh and blood. Here's how you can find out where they are and point the finger at them behind this corporation. They don't want you to see them. But you can find them. You just say, that wife that Cain found in Genesis 4, that wife he found, prove that she was a daughter of Adam and Eve. It can't be done. And you also can't prove that Cain is a son of Adam. Once you look into this now, you're going to find out who these people are that run the Federal Reserve. And that's what this whole war is all about. It's Genesis 3:15. The Almighty said it to the serpent in the garden. There's going to be warfare between your seed, serpent, and the seed of the woman. It's going on right now in this country. And the seed of the serpent is doing all this. They run all these, this corporation, and they're live flesh and blood people, but you can't see them. They won't let you see them, but you can identify them. And King David in the Old Testament and Goliath will tell you how you could tell what they look like. You can see exactly what they look like. So, Gerard, I know I held you up, and John, down the road I want to tell you more about this, how we can find out and identify them and point the finger right at them, and they're going to flee. It's like kryptonite when we expose them. So I'll call you back another time, and thank you for listening to me.
Okay, yeah, very good. Thanks a lot.
Okay, good night, John.
Good night,
Gerard.
Yeah, good night. Okay. Steve, we're over time. What do you got? Hit me with your best shot, if you're still there.
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay.
Well, it's very late. I've very much enjoyed tonight's call-in, and thank you for doing what you're doing. God bless all of you. I was one of the callers talked about something referring to authority, and today you couldn't get by with this or something. But I was thinking about the billionaires that went down with a one-way ticket. And I don't know if you're aware of who was on that, but I think it's a great-granddaughter.
You're talking about the Titanic?
Yes, they went down.
Yeah,
to,
they were
to
against
see.
The central bank, and that's what. And they another false flag, which doesn't mean that it didn't happen. It just means that it was a setup. Another conspiracy.
Well, I don't know how many people. I'm an archaeologist for truth, and so I found out that the survivors of the Titanic all heard explosions, much like the Twin Towers. And so I think it's a great, maybe a great granddaughter that was steering, but also that they were against the Federal Reserve, the guys that were invited, and they had to get rid of multimillionaires back then. They were against that, the Federal Reserve system, and so I just wanted to point out a couple of things, and we don't have to take this any further. I was just thinking about the information that's coming out because our mainstream media never brings the truth out. And so.
Well, listen, they don't bring the truth out. When they do bring it out, it's going to be to give you shock and awe. And some people won't even be able to take it. They'll be jumping off of buildings when they realize that everything they told us was a lie. And that's,
yeah.
They will even use that as a weapon for themselves by just unloading all the truth on everybody all at once. That's my opinion anyway. You know, that's
okay. Yeah. I never thought of that perspective, but yes.
It's
well,
so
we've
bad.
Got so many
you
things. Blue Beam.
Look at.
Go ahead.
We would never get out of this except for the grace of God. We can't.
Amen.
This is a battle that we can't do alone. Because it is powers and principalities. So if you don't know that, and you don't know what to do about that, then you're stuck. And so I think that, you know, there is a great revival going on right now in America, and of course they're not talking about it because they don't want to give it any traction. But it is happening.
Yes.
You're going to see it. You're going to see more and more every day, and I think you're going to see a big revival of the church, Christianity.
Yes. Yes, sir. Amen. Hey, so something that I have not digged into yet is about these councils. And I've signed up in my area. I'm in coastal to Lake of the Ozarks, Missouri, about half an hour away. But I've signed up to represent this area because there's nobody here. But these councils of safety, that's not the correct...
Committee of safety.
Committee, thank you. Yeah, committees of safety. Where do I go to learn about that, and what can I do to further our cause?
Well, we got a lot of information laid out on the website. So if you go to the front page...
Yes, and it's almost daunting, the amount and where to start.
Well, it does tell you start here. So, you know what I mean? In other words, you want to get a certain amount of people before you go see the sheriff. Seeing the sheriff is one of the early on things, but you don't want to do it too early. You want to have a couple meetings. You want to get some people built up. Don't forget the sheriff is the elected, the highest.
Yes,
elected.
Yes. Yes, sir.
So
yeah.
He is also a political animal, like it or not. When we were doing the Tea Party meetings, and we got two counties or three counties together over here, and we would meet, you know, once a week or whatever we were. And one of the things the sheriff did, it struck me that he was smart enough to do this. He asked how many people were from his county with a show of hands, because he wanted to know what kind of political clout or suicide he was going to commit, you know?
Sure. So, of course.
Before you go see him, you need a group of people. And even if everybody's not from his county, that's okay. But put the people from his county, maybe even some constituents that he actually knows, up in the front. Look at they're human beings, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And so you have to play a little bit of that game, because you got to have some credibility and some clout. And look,
yes.
If you read the Bible, you'll see so many times where people, you know, did things that basically, you know, it almost seems like it was a
cards are set against them, but nevertheless,
Right.
Yahweh or Yahweh.
Right.
Esther. Esther being one of a numerous.
You must have read my mind, so that's where I was going to go. So it is acceptable, and we do have to do these things. But anyway, I want to go now. It's been a good, great show. Thank you for.
Yes. God bless you, sir. Thank you for doing what you do.
Yep, you're welcome. Have a good night.
You too.